This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block. July 4th marks the anniversary of a decisive moment in Civil War history. In 1863, Robert E. Lee's Confederate Army retreated from Gettysburg. For 3 days, Union and Confederate troops had clashed in Pennsylvania. The struggle was probably as significant to the outcome of the Civil War as D-Day was to the Second World War. Commentator John McDonough sees a relationship between anniversary celebrations for both battles.
Certain rituals of remembrance mark our stepping stones into the present. These rituals take on a special importance and urgency when there are still witnesses to link us to our past. But living memory is fragile and obeys the laws of supply and demand, cheap in bounty, but treasured in scarcity. You may remember less than a month ago, the attention of the country turned to a rocky precipice on the northern coast of France facing the English Channel. Point de Hoc, it was called. A number of men gathered there to remember, once more, what they had done 65 years before on D-Day. President Obama was there, too.
We cannot help but draw strength from those moments in history when the best among us were somehow able to swallow their fears and secure a beachhead on an unforgiving shore.
If you were stirred or moved by any of that, then maybe you can imagine what it might have been like at another remembrance 71 years ago this week. It was 1938 and the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg.
75 years ago this afternoon, cannon roared at Gettysburg. Today, exactly three quarters of a century later, the boys in blue and the boys in gray are meeting on this historic battlefield for their last reunion. The program this afternoon is the official opening of the final reunion of the Blue and the Gray.
Between 1861 and 1865, 2.5 million men served in the Union Army. Figures are less precise for Confederate forces. About 620,000 were killed on both sides. 50 years later, in 1913, more than 50,000 veterans returned to Gettysburg. It would be the largest Civil War reunion ever. Veterans groups talked for several years about a 75th reunion. But by 1938, the roll call of veterans still alive had shrunk to about 10,000. A final reunion became possible when the federal government offered to provide free transportation.
I wish that all of you elsewhere could be in Gettysburg to see the most colorful sight of your lives. Early Wednesday morning, the opening date of the observance of the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg, the first of 26 special trains rolled into this historic community. Laughing and crying and waving their hats, these old veterans, each with an attendant, detrained and were welcomed officially to Gettysburg.
A sense of 19th century formality descended on Gettysburg. Some veterans arrived in uniform. Many sported tufts of white sideburns, mustaches, and goatees. Despite the sweltering July heat, films show nearly everyone dressed in coats, vests, and neckties.
These fine old gentlemen boarded a fleet of buses and were taken to their tented city, the largest of its kind and the most modern ever constructed in peacetime.
More than 1,900 Union and Confederate veterans came. Awaiting them was a fleet of wheelchairs, 3,800 tents, 20 miles of electric wiring, 50,000 yards of mosquito netting, and 27 cases of whiskey. Their average age now was 94, but only the whiskey was in short supply. It was a national event of remembrance unlike any the country had seen in a generation. Front-page news in the New York Times and broadcast live by all four radio networks.
Some 2,000 veterans, ages from 90 and upwards, have gathered in what will be the final get-together of the Blue and the Gray. And so tonight, radio is privileged for the first time to play a part in this pageant, to bring the voices of those veterans of the Blue and the Gray into your homes from Maine to California.
Some of the voices had grown weak by then, but they still had stories to tell.
General Gillette, will you tell us in your own words your experiences during the celebrated picket charge at the Bloody Angle at the Battle of Gettysburg?
Well, I belonged to Davis Division, that Davis Brigade, and we got about 10 feet up the slope. Then we had to turn. Those that were living had to turn.
What do you mean by turn, you brigade?
Run like hell.
You don't mean to say, General Gillette, that soldiers run?
Well, if one tells you he didn't, he's telling you a damn lie.
Oh, General, maybe.
Newsreel cameras were there, too, capturing images the country would never see again.
Actual spots where famous skirmishes and attacks took place were revisited. Once again, these soldiers of another day stood by an unforgettable stone wall, used as a Union breastworks in repulsing Confederate advances. Only a few Southerners crossed it.
The stone wall still stood and became the focal point of one particularly remarkable moment.
75 years ago, almost to the hour, the cause of the Confederacy reached its crest. In the climax of the charge of that immortal Virginian, George Henry Pickett.
About a dozen veterans of Gettysburg gathered on opposite sides of that wall, reached across the stones, and shook hands.
Hello!
Some believe that to be the only authentic recording of the famed Rebel Yell by a Confederate soldier.
This is the third day of the final reunion of the Blue and the Gray.
At 6:30 Sunday afternoon, 150,000 people turned out to hear President Roosevelt dedicate the new peace monument on Oak Hill.
On behalf of the people of the United States, I accept this monument in the spirit of brotherhood and peace.
Moments later, two Gettysburg veterans jointly lowered the giant American flag shrouding the 35-foot-tall tower.
The two ropes are pulled. The flag hovers for a second on one. Now it comes, the Star-Spangled Banner. Slowly, the Union veteran and the Confederate veteran, helped by United States Army men, feebly walk to the side, light the light, and you can hear the applause from the great sea of people, the unbelievable mass of people who are spread out over Oak Ridge, where fighting went on July 1st, 75 years ago, at this Gettysburg battlefield.
If you listen to the broadcast and read the stories, you find yourself constantly coming on the phrases, last reunion, the final gathering. A terrible inevitability of impending loss pervaded Gettysburg in 1938, as thread by thread the final living ties to a fabled American past were breaking before our eyes, and we were powerless to capture or contain the loss. Three veterans would die at Gettysburg before the celebration ended, and every year that followed, the roll call grew smaller. By 1952, 91 years after the start of the war, the reunion of Confederate veterans numbered two. William Bush and William Townsend.
How old are you, General Bush? 106 years. How old are you, General Townsend?
106.
Same age. You think this will be the last time we'll be together?
Yes, I do.
What do you think, General Bush?
I'm not sure.
When did the last Civil War veteran die? Well, that's in dispute, so we'll leave that for experts to argue. More important, why should we spend time today reminiscing on this reminiscence? Perhaps because the life cycle of living memory doesn't change. As of this report, there are five verified World War I veterans still living, two of them Americans. We've paid far less attention to World War I than we might have, largely because of World War II, which brings us back to President Obama last month at Pointe du Hoc. 10 years from now, on the 75th anniversary of D-Day, there will be another gathering at Normandy with another president, but fewer veterans, just as there was at Gettysburg in 1938. The uniforms will be different, but the faces will be remarkably alike. The rule is, by looking back, sometimes you can see forward. For NPR News, this is John McDonough.
John McDonough is an independent radio producer in Chicago.